The reading this morning is from 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning at verse 1. To God's elect, exiles scattered throughout the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, through the sanctifying work of the Spirit, to be obedient to Jesus Christ and sprinkled with his blood. Grace and peace be yours in abundance. Praise be to God, to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In all of this, you greatly rejoice, though now, for a little while, you may have to suffer grief and all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Concerning this salvation, the prophets, who spoke of the grace that was to come to you, searched intently and with the greatest care, trying to find out the time and circumstances in which the Spirit of Christ in them was pointing when he predicted the sufferings of the Messiah and the glories that would follow. It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves, but you, when they spoke of the things that have now been told by those who have preached the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven. Even the angels long to look into these things.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful service. Sorry that Billy and I and the girls are not with you. We're currently over in Palmerston North. We've got the privilege of a couple that we presided over their wedding. We're godparents of their baby, and they're being baptized today. So we're over with that service. Hope you're having a great time and enjoying this time of worship and study. I am really excited because we are starting a new sermon series today where we're looking for 5 weeks at 1 Peter. It's the first letter that Peter wrote towards the end of the New Testament, and we're going to look at it over 5 weeks. There's actually a week in the middle where we're doing our Bible study, which is this time is on the Gospel of John, which is followed by a soul lab. So get on reading the Gospel of John, because it'll be so much richer if you've read it recently. But for around that 5 weeks, we're going to be looking at 1 Peter. I actually recommend reading 1 Peter each week as we go through this, because again, it'll be richer for you as we become immersed in Scripture, as we become more familiar with it, we'll get to know it more and it can impart into us. There's a couple of reasons why we're studying the book of 1 Peter. Firstly, because Billy and I were praying earlier this year about what we felt that we as a congregation needed, and 1 Peter came to mind as we were doing that. There's a couple of thoughts of why that makes sense. One was, we were actually talking with Bishop Justin this week with our staff team, and he was talking about different ways that people have received communication and how they've responded to communication over the ages. So, for example, we used to sit around the fireplace and share stories, or people would, itinerant speakers like Jesus would speak on a hillside, and we'd hear information, we'd think about it, and it would change us. And then what happens is we then became the written word, and it became a little bit more individualistic with just one teacher and one receiver, you know, in that conversation. But it still required you to do something about it. Until mid last century, basically, what happened was we got the television, and information moved into a form of entertainment. And in fact, if books weren't entertaining, they were losing in the competition. And churches have fallen that way too. I mean, I hope our church is fun to be at, but if it becomes entertainment, then it doesn't need to be responded to. In fact, it's even got worse nowadays with mobile phones, is that people just scroll through. If you don't like what's being read or you're not entertained by it, you just move on to the next thing. And the algorithms on all the media platforms that you use on your phone actually are set by things that you would like to read so that you get addicted to them. So actually, it's not real information for you to respond to anyway. But 1 Peter is a practical book, and it's got practical instructions about how we live at this point in time. It's particularly written to people in a certain point in time, but I think it's really apt to us right now. And so we think that it's really key for us to be digging into. How do we live at this point in time? And one of the main themes, and this is the second reason why we felt that 1 Peter would be right, and that this is why God was inviting us to pick it up, is that it talks and is written to groups of Christians who are suffering. Now, I don't know what you think of when I say suffering. Maybe you think about the people in the Israel-Gaza crisis right now, in that conflict, or in the Ukraine, or in Myanmar, or people who are suffering in East Africa due to hunger. Or maybe you're thinking about people who've got illness or sickness. Maybe you've got sickness in your body. I've got a couple of friends and family members who've got terminal diagnosis. That's a huge thing. People are suffering there. But we also suffer in other ways, like we suffer with loneliness, or we suffer in our marriages, or we feel like we don't fit, or we're separated in some way. And this letter is written to the likes of us. If you feel like you're suffering in some way, or you want to serve someone who's suffering, or you've ever wondered about why God allows suffering, then this book talks to that. The third reason is it also talks about some really good ways about how we share our faith. And Billy and I have been really inspired recently to be thinking about that. And we did our Alpha course really earlier this year, but we want to keep at the forefront of our mind that it is important for us to share our faith, share the good news of Jesus with our neighbors, with our friends, with our family members who don't know, with those who are around us, with our work colleagues, with people that we meet. We want people to come and meet with Jesus. And 1 Peter talks about that. So we're going to dive in. I'm going to talk through what I've done this week as I've been wrestling and working through 1 Peter. The reason I'm going to do that is because this is kind of a tool, some tools in here that hopefully will inspire you in your own studies that you might be able to take and use. I use these techniques when I'm preparing sermons, but also just for my own information. I usually spend time sitting with it, meditating on it, memorizing passages of it, but I also study it, and I'm going to take through some of those things. The first thing that I do is that I read it through. And I read it through just, particularly when it's something short like this, I just sit and I read it and I allow whatever it is to come over me. And then what I've done this time is that I've printed it out into large font. And the reason I print it out into large font is because then I can also highlight it. And the things that I spotted in the book, I've colored into different colors and different things. Each of those different colors represent something as I'm piecing it through and going, what's standing out for me in this text? You'll see that there's a number of different colors. For example, orange is references to Old Testament imagery, or there's loads of Old Testament quotes in 1 Peter. So I highlight that because I noticed that. The next thing I do is I've noticed where there's references where God is doing something or what God has already done, and that's, I've highlighted that in blue. Or a theme that I noticed popped up a bunch of times was about holiness and obedience, so I've highlighted that in yellow. There's lots of references here to suffering, as I talked about, and I've highlighted that in red. And then I've highlighted in green the stuff where it talks about for us to do something or to respond in a different way. And I found that there was heaps of those in here. So that's what I did first. And then what I did, which I tend to almost always do when I'm doing a Bible study for myself or for others in any setting, is I turn to the Bible Project. The Bible Project, we've talked about a lot here. It's a really easy, accessible tool that you can find free online and gives you a number of things. But what I find most helpful is their book overviews. So when you're looking at a book of the Bible, like 1 Peter, for example, you can go on to their website or on YouTube and you type in Bible Project 1 Peter. And they have a short little video that gives you a summary of 1 Peter. They talk a little bit about the history. They talk about some of the themes that are in there. They have a little drawings of the structure that takes place. And I'm going to unpack that a little bit for us here. But I do recommend in your reading and studying of 1 Peter that you dive in and look at Bible Project this week. But I want to give an overview of the structure that they pick up here. I find it's a little simplified. I think there's that 1 Peter is not as structured like this. I don't think Peter intended us to see it in this way. But what it does is it highlights the themes, which I think are the main themes in this letter, that we're actually going to look at through our series. So in essence, there's two bits at the beginning and two bits at the end, followed by three bits in the middle. Did you get that? I'll show you here. So the first bit is there's like a welcome or a greeting at the beginning, followed by a song of worship or a kind of explosion of excitement from Peter as he pours out what God has done for us and how he's excited about that and how that's transformed us. There's loads of blue in mine through that section because it's things that God has done that we can see. And then there's the three sections I talked about. The three sections aren't the same length, and they're not entirely clean, but they do label the three things that kind of get laid out through the letter. And then we get a prayer from Peter to the people who are reading, and then we get a farewell at the end. That's the structure of it. When you're reading it through this week, you can kind of hold that in your mind because it highlights, this is what I'm looking at here. Oh, that makes sense. That's what's going on here. These three key sections that get worked out is the first section has heaps of references from the Old Testament. And really what's happening is that he's inviting us to become part of a new community. The family of God. In fact, we're invited to be like the family of Abraham. And there's lots of imagery there that points us into that. And that shows that that who's being spoken to here gets that first and foremost, we are included. We're welcomed. We're enjoined. We're part of the big story that started in Genesis that's going to go right through to Revelation. And that in this journey at this moment in time, we are part of that story. It's really inclusive, it's really encouraging, it's really surprising and delighting in us. The second image that comes through is about how do we live now as part of that community in the world. And the main imagery that he uses here, or the main description he has, is submission. That's the invitation he has. And there's some bits in here which some people have found difficult. In fact, some people have taught inappropriately over a number of centuries. And some of it's quite hard to take. For example, it talks about submit to the emperor, to Caesar. Well, we know what a tyrant he was, but why is Peter asking us to do that? That's something we've got to grapple with here. That's what Peter talks about. It then talks about if you're a slave, submit to your master. That grates with us in some cases because we know that slavery is not okay, but there's something here that he's inviting us to do. And then, of course, we get into the real tricky stuff where it talks about wives, submit to your husbands. And we're going to look at some of that here because why is he talking about that? What is he meaning? What does that mean there? And then it talks to the husbands as well and what do they have to do? But that's what's happening here in the middle of this letter. And then in the final section, the final of the three, he talks about suffering. He talks about what suffering is. He talks about the suffering that they're suffering. He talks about why suffering takes place. He talks about what it can be used for. And he talks about Jesus as the model of suffering. And that's the invitation we have here. And these are, I think, broad strokes for the letter. I think that there's more nuance than that. But we're going to take these themes. They don't tidily fit in. But we're going to take these themes over our weeks. So next week, I'm going to talk about the Old Testament imagery that's in 1 Peter. And talk about what it means for us to become part of that community. And what do these Old Testament images mean for us? And then the following week after our Soul Lab, I'm going to talk about the submission passages. And what does that mean for wives to submit to your husbands? What does that mean? And we're going to dig into some of that. And why is he inviting us to submit to powers and rulers that are above us? We're going to look at that. And then Billy's going to teach on suffering. She's going to talk about what it means for us to be suffering and why there is suffering and what that purpose is. And then what happens is I'm going to teach one last sermon, which I think is actually the theme of the whole book. And that's because whilst there's lots of things going on here and there's lots of beautiful themes in there, I don't think that they're actually genuinely what 1 Peter is about. He's talking to people who are suffering. He's talking to people who are part of the family of God. He's talking to people about what they need to do. But the purpose is because he's interested in who they will become. And that for me is the key image. And the key message of 1 Peter is about transformation. Who are we becoming? And we see that most especially in Peter himself. Peter is, I'm imagining that most people here will know who Peter is, but in case you don't, Peter is was a disciple of Jesus. He was a fisherman. He gets listed in Acts chapter 4 by the clever people in Jerusalem. They assume that he's uneducated, but they're surprised that he's uneducated because he speaks with such mana and such authority and such clarity. But we know Peter if you've read the Gospels, and we know him because he's rambunctious and he's shoots from the hip and he's kind of not clean cut. He's a dirty fisherman who doesn't always get it right. But there are a couple of key things that I think in the life of Peter that speak to this moment. And this is what we see at the beginning of this text. He starts with simply the word Peter. Because he's reminding them that this is him. And for all of us, that brings us to mind who Peter is. Peter was the first person in Mark chapter 8 to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. He's the first one to do so. Who do you say that I am, says Jesus in Mark 8. He says, you are the Messiah, the Son of God. Jesus says, wow, you've got it right, Peter. And then Jesus goes on to talk about his suffering and his death upon the cross. And Peter goes, whoa, hang on a sec here, Jesus. Because he's shooting from the hip and because he's putting himself out there and he's rough and ready, he says, no, Jesus, we're not going to do suffering stuff. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. I don't know if you've ever imagined being told to, you know, that your name was Satan. But that's quite a vulnerable thing, right? But this is a key moment for Peter because this is Peter learning about what suffering is. And that suffering is necessary for growth into Jesus' way. And to become like Jesus, it requires suffering. And that's what we see in this letter. There's a couple other key moments with Peter. Peter begins to start grasping these things. Like, for example, he's there in John's gospel. We see the cleansing of the feet. Jesus gets down and is cleaning the feet before the Last Supper. And what happens is Peter says, you can't wash my feet. And Jesus says, if you don't let me wash my feet, you've got no part with me. Peter says, okay, all right, wash my whole body. He's starting to learn. He wants to grasp. He's rough and ready, but he's ready. He's ready to learn. And later on in that meal, what happens is Jesus says that somebody's going to betray him. And Peter says, not me. Not me, I'd lay down my life for you. You see, he started to learn about what suffering is. And Jesus has this most beautiful moment where he says to him, Peter, you're going to deny me three times. And he goes, I ain't going to deny you. I can never do that. And we know, those of us who know the story, that what happens is he's there in the fireplace and Jesus is on trial and he gets pushed and the pressure comes on and Peter denies him, denies even knowing him three times. And you get this beautiful one-on-one session at the end of John's gospel. Jesus is walking along the beach with Peter and they're talking, a one-on-one mentoring session, where Jesus is reconciling with Peter and he says, Peter, do you love me? He says, you know that I love you. And then Jesus talks some more, and then he says, Peter, do you love me? He says, of course I love you. You know that I love you. And then Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? He says, Peter was cut because he knew that he's asking him three times because he betrayed him three times. That he denied knowing him. Peter says, yes, I do. I do love you. He's brought back in. Something changes with Peter as he's grasping what suffering means, as he grows more into Jesus' way, as he's being apprenticed, walking along the side of the lakeside, which is where he first met Jesus, where he gave up his nets immediately to follow him. But he grows and he grows and he grows, and we start seeing through Acts that he becomes this incredible person of God. We have this amazing moment in Acts chapter 10 where Peter is praying and he sees this vision which totally transforms the whole church and the whole world. That's because Peter is willing to be changed. He meets up with Paul, or Saul, who becomes Paul, and he's part of Paul's transformation. And then he ends up here in Rome. That's where he's writing this letter. He's writing this letter to persecuted churches across Asia. But he's changed. He's deeper and he's wiser. He's humble and he's beautiful. And he's given us an absolute treat of a book that we all need. I need this book. I really, really do. I started a discipline this week. I don't normally like talking about disciplines I've just started because I've only done it three times so far. But what I've done is I've woken up before dawn, before anyone else in the house is awake, and I get my clothes on. I go outside and I walk slowly, like really slowly. And I do contemplation with God as I walk really slowly. Like I mean, I walked for 15 minutes and I walked past three houses. Okay, and then my alarm went off to say that I was halfway through, and then I turned around, and then I walked past the three houses over 15 minutes. There are some people at New Vista, which is near where I live, who a couple of times have got out of their cars and seen me, and I think they might think that I'm a little bit weird, or that maybe I need some help in some way because I'm just so slow, walking so slowly, because I need that. I'm realizing that I'm anxious at the moment, that I'm stressed and I'm fretting, and then my brain is going a million miles an hour and I can't always tell what's going on inside me. But when I slow down, I see that. I need to slow down. I need to be humble. I need this book, 1 Peter. These are just some notes and thoughts that I was having this week. Just as I'm reading it through, I'm making notes and thoughts. And the person that 1 Peter calls us to be is wonderful. And I want to be this person. Peter describes what you can be too. It paints a picture of what we can become: gentle, tender-hearted, humble, genuine love for one another, returning good for evil, slow to anger, joyful in all circumstances. When trouble comes, I rejoice because it makes me better. I need this book. I don't do that currently. All of that. I'm harsh to myself, to others in my head, and even occasionally harsh out loud. I'm kind to people who are kind to me, but I want to be kind to everyone. I want to exude the life that Jesus lived, the life Jesus taught, and the life Peter knows is possible because he has changed so much. This book is for us. Just going to finish by reading these first bits here in 1 Peter chapter 1, to God's elect, exiles scattered throughout the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. These three words I just want to unpack, and we'll finish here. Elect, exiles, scattered. The word elect simply means chosen. You are chosen. You are here because you are chosen. I mean, in this universe, you're here because you are chosen. Every single one of us, God wants us to be here. He has chosen us. The second word, exiles, actually is the Greek word parapodimos. And what that literally means is like foreigner or stranger in the land. It's like someone who doesn't have a visa, who's not welcome. And for many of us, we feel strangers. Sometimes we feel strangers to ourselves. Sometimes we feel strangers in our family. Sometimes we feel strangers in our community of some way, or in our church, or in our land. Some of us literally don't get, you know, the same rights as others because of our status or because of our education, and we feel different. And the last word, scattered, it's actually the word diaspora, which gets used of the Jewish people who are scattered everywhere. But this isn't written to Jewish people, it's written to Gentiles. And we are spread out. And we are scattered, and we're foreigners, we're strangers. But we're chosen. These people were, before their conversion, aliens and strangers. And after their conversion, they were still aliens and strangers. The difference is that they knew that they were chosen strangers. You are supposed to be here. You are supposed to be with us. We are called, we are loved, we've been set apart. It describes that in the next bunch of verses. I encourage you to dig into it this week. Know that you are loved, that you have been redeemed, that there is a life that is available for you too, to be transformed more and more in his image. You who are strangers are chosen. Come. Enjoy 1 Peter.